And welcome to the Impact Interviews. My name's Laura, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Tracy Jackson, who is Senior Research Fellow and PPI Lead at the University of Edinburgh. Hi, Tracy.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for having me.
Hi. So, Tracy, these are the Impact Interviews. So before we find out more about your work, can I start by asking you, what is Impact and why should anyone care?
I think it's an interesting question, Laura, and I must admit I had to go and Google impact because I had a sort of vague, fluffy awareness of what I thought it was, but I was like, what is the exact definition? And my interpretation of it would be it's the effect of someone's behavior or actions or activities and what that has on someone or something else. So I think that's where I'm sort of sticking my flag in the sand with that one there.
Okay. So the effect that your thing has on somebody else, that's not you. Okay. So why should people care about impact?
I think just if something that you're doing is going to impact someone, if it's going to affect someone else, then you should just automatically care about other people. I think as human beings, we should just be caring about other people. That's how communities work. That's how society works. So definitely, if I'm doing something and it's going to impact or affect someone, then I definitely need to care about whether that's a good impact on them or a bad impact. Is it going to harm anyone? So it's just to be mindful of the actions that which you take.
So you could, so to be provocative, Tracy, you could decide to make a negative impact on someone.
Oh, you could decide to do that. But you would hope in life that most people actually go about their life doing things because they want to make themselves happy, they want to make other people happy, and they're not spending their time wondering around about how they can hurt people. You would hope that people are thinking, I would like to do something nice for someone, and then pay it forward. Hope they pay it forward to do something nice for someone else.
The ripple effect. So for the purpose of today then, Tracy, we're going to talk about impact as being positive social change and positive impact on other people.
Yes, perfect. That would be my preference, yeah, rather than anything mean I've got cooking up in my head.
Brilliant, brilliant. Right, so if we can kind of come to you and the sorts of stuff that you get up to, I mean, research fellow and PPI lead. So this is the lightning round, like, what is it? Who cares? Why is it amazing?
Okay, so I'm a researcher, as you said, at the University of Edinburgh, and I work at the moment within the respiratory field. So that is to do with people who have lung conditions, who maybe struggle to breathe. And patient and public involvement, which is what PPI stands for, it is working with members of the public. And specifically, that's people either who have lung conditions or they are looking after someone or have looked after someone with a lung condition and bringing them into our research. So not as a participant, so we're not doing the research on them. We are inviting them in to join our team to make sure that the research that we're doing is actually going to positively benefit their life. So we think of them as colleagues, they're team members, and we try and remove that kind of power dynamic so it's a much more equal level playing field. And who should care? I think everyone should care, because everyone has health. So everyone should be caring about what our researchers are doing, about certain conditions that you have, or maybe certain things that are happening in the world or in your environment that could impact your health. So I think everyone should care about it, and everyone should have a say on things that actually impact their life. And why is it amazing? I think it's amazing because we obviously have in our university very talented researchers that spend a lot of time studying. So they are real experts in certain areas of the research of conditions, but actually many of them don't live day to day with that condition. So while they might have an idea and they think this is a great thing, this could help someone. Actually, if we speak to people who live with that condition, they say, actually, that's not even something that I think about. What I would actually really like you to help me with is this or that. And that's why it's amazing, because if we listen to the people that this research actually impacts, then we hear the ideas from them, we work together and we build research that is actually really important to those that it impacts. And it hopefully brings really high quality research. Researchers are happy because they're doing great research and helping people, and people who are living with that condition are happy as well because they are doing something as well that is helping them and also other people living with that condition. So I love it. I think it's amazing. I feel everyone should think it's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And what I've heard is that kind of in respiratory, and especially through the stuff that you're doing, you're sort of leading the world a little bit on PPI. And so it's also amazing because you're a little bit of a trailblazer in kind of figuring out how to do this best. And therefore, the stuff that you can do and know can trickle down or be shared out across other disease areas or other patient groups or other countries, etc. So I kind of heard that like you guys are a bit trailblazer. Is that
Oh,
true?
that's a nice term to hear. Yeah, so I would like to think that we are. So patient and public involvement, working with members of the public, has been around for quite a while, but it has not been as prolific as what it is starting to become now. So there have been people for years doing great work, but now is the time where it's actually coming more into the mainstream. And also, as it comes into the mainstream, then there can be great examples of working with members of the public, but then there can be examples that aren't so great. And so, what we try to do in our centre, so that's the ASTMA UK Centre for Applied Research, what we've tried to do there is really work with members of the public the whole way through everything that we're doing. So, we don't just get people involved in the research projects that we're doing. We actually have them sitting on our centre management committee. And so, they make the decisions about how the centre is run as well. And the way that we look at that is that actually people are more than just their health condition. They're more than someone who is just living with asthma or living with COPD. They have lives, very busy lives, they have careers, and they have lots and lots of skills from those that they can come and work with us in our centre. And that's why it makes it great, because it's a really holistic team effort and how we have undertaken all of this research. And so what we've done from there is we've taken our learnings and we've actually published on how we have done this, because we think it works well and we do want to keep it a secret, because actually we want lots of other people to do it, be doing it really well too. So we have published on what we've done, we on the way that we work, we do training on how we work, and we are always open to hearing from researchers who are looking for some guidance or help. So people are always free to email me, get in touch. And I'm more than happy to help them on their PPI journey as well.
That's really cool. So, can I ask you, without divulging any confidential information or, anything, could you sort of reflect back on some of the stuff that you've been up to and maybe pick out an example of where a patient and a clinician or a researcher have come together in the way that you describe, and it's kind of affected the quality of the research in a positive way, and then it's affected the patient or the patient community in a really great way?
Yeah. So wow, that's a big question.
Yeah.
It is, yeah, definitely. So I think something that is often a tricky one within research is often participant information sheets. So participant information sheets are the information that are given to someone who's signed up or who's going to sign up to be involved in research. And they're a little bit of a struggle because there's an ethics committee who want to protect the patient, protect individuals. So they have a whole lot of requirements that they want to go into that information sheet. If that information sheet involves any kind of medication or pharmaceutical, then the pharmaceutical company wants a lot of information in there as well. And researchers also want their information in there. And we have had situations where people come to us and they show us 17-page plus information sheets, and they wonder, we can't get anyone to sign up for this project. And it's a really important project. It's about a drug, but we just can't get people to sign up. And I say, great, well, we'll have a look at your documents. Could you send them over? And before I don't even need to read them, I just need to see that there's more than 17 pages. And I'm like, aha, I know what the problem is here. But then we work with, as I say, people who are living with asthma, people, patients, and we talk to them and we say, what is the information that you want to get from this? And because they are the same as me, they're like, I'm not reading 17 pages.
No, no.
And then in a way, that is an ethical concern as well, because when you sign to consent to be involved in research, you're saying it's called informed consent. And the idea behind that is that that person who signed knows exactly what's going on. But if you've given someone 17 pages of very technical information and then they sign, yeah, that's great, they probably haven't read it, or they probably isn't as informed as what you think. So we work with our PPI members, and we can work through these forms and make sure that they hold the information that patients want to hear, what they want to read, and what they want to know about what's going to happen in this study. And we have to find a compromise. And that's what we've done. We work together, we find a compromise, and we get a much more accessible information sheet. And that means then that actually recruitment in these studies can go up, and then we can find out whether these drugs work and whether they help people long term. And again, I think when we talk about accessibility, actually just writing is sometimes not enough either. So we need to think about people who actually can't read these information sheets if they're in English. So maybe we need to think about translating them into different languages as well. And we also need to think about actually, do we need to make a video or an animation to make this more accessible for people who have maybe lower literacy rates? And I think it's definitely important for researchers because and also members of minoritized ethnic communities because they often don't engage in research for a lot of reasons. But one of them could be that they actually can't read what the information sheet is because it's not in the language that is their primary language. It's not their first language, and it's 17 pages of a lot of very technical information. So it's about actually making researchers think about that, saying you actually want to access people from maybe a particular ethnic community, but you need to make the steps in order to engage with them. So you need to maybe translate it into the language that they want. You need to speak to them specifically about what it is that they want to read in that information sheet and the benefits to their community. And researchers just, they have so much going on that maybe they just don't think about these things. And that's the importance of the work that our group does to make researchers think about these things, because it really is a team effort.
And so I guess as well, they're like trained to write technically, trained to present technically, you know, their whole life is about showing how technical their things are, whereas patients are like not really that bothered about how technical it is. They just want to understand the impact, you know, kind of the consequence of the thing that they're doing for them. And I suppose as well, there's a kind of stage thing, isn't there? At the beginning of the project, you might not necessarily know what that impact might be. And there could be an argument that you're writing for like several outcomes, and therefore it gets even more complicated, even more complicated too.
100%, Laura, that's totally what it is. It's not researchers' fault because actually they're trained to write in a certain way. They're trained, if they've done their PhD, to write in a very technical way for their thesis, which is a set format. It's usually well over 70,000 words. And also, researchers are encouraged to write academic articles and to publish them to share with the academic community. And again, they are in a specific format using a certain language, and it's not the language that is used widely without outside that circle. So actually, if they want success with their research, if they want it to actually benefit people, which they do, they need to speak to the people it impacts and talk to them about actually what is this and this is what we're doing, and would that benefit you? And sometimes it's yes, sometimes it's no. But you know, researchers need to hear that, because otherwise that's a waste of time and money if they go and spend all of this time doing research that actually isn't going to have any impact, because it's not going to be picked up by patients at the end. So yeah, so a team effort, and it's an interesting world.
And have you got any stories about patients and the patient journey? Because I also read from the impact report that like the patients themselves report having an enhanced understanding of their own condition and like their own self-management as a consequence of working with you guys.
Yeah, definitely. So we have had some of our members come and tell us, because they sit in these meetings and they hear actually what is at the very forefront of asthma research, what are the really new things that are happening, that they're able to go and think about their own asthma. They're able to think, take information back from these meetings they're in, and think about how they can manage their asthma a bit better, what works for them, what doesn't. But a lot of the time, with research, it takes a long time from when you do the research for when it comes into practice. Sometimes it can be set about 7 years, I think, is on average. But and a lot of our members think of what they're doing is actually how they can help other people with the condition. And I think that's what we talked about at the start, actually, what is the impact of what you're doing? And they think about whenever actually they were younger, what did they want as a person who was living with asthma? What would they want to give to other people? And that's what a whole lot of it is about. I think the other thing that patients tell us is that there's a real sense of community as well, and they like to meet up with other people who are living with asthma as well, so they can talk about it and hear how they're doing. And I think Definitely, I could even say an example from my PhD. So I looked at self-management in asthma, specifically in Northern Ireland, and that's where I'm from. And when I was talking to PPI members about my research, and I was saying, oh yes, and about these asthma reviews. So if you have asthma, you're meant to have an asthma review every year, so annual asthma review. And because my supervisors were clinicians and they knew that this is in the guidelines, that was what people with asthma were meant to be having, I just presumed, I'm not a clinician. I'm not a doctor, I'm not medically trained. I just presumed, oh, then people with asthma must know what this is. So I was talking to my group of people with asthma, and they were saying, well, I don't have that. What am I meant to have? I'm meant to have this yearly, and I'm meant to have an asthma action plan. I don't have either of those things. So they were able to then go back to their doctor and say, these are the things that I'm meant to have to help me manage my asthma. So that's just a small example of how actually being in this meeting, they found out something that they're meant to have, but it wasn't actually happening. So I think that's really important. So there's that sense of community, being able to manage their asthma better, and that feeling of being able to do something that's going to help other people as well.
Yeah. Oh, that's super cool. So as we kind of coming towards the end, I'm really hoping that you have a few hints or tips or guidance for anyone who is thinking about creating impact, thinking about the beginning of their journey that you would be willing to share with us.
Oh wow. So I think for me, the real thing to think about impact is actually what is the end result of it? So why are you doing this? And also who is it going to impact and how will it impact them? So I think just doing things for the sake of doing something, while that might be very lovely for you, but actually who else is that helping? What is the end result? And actually, does that negatively impact someone? So I think those are the really important things for me. What is it you're doing? Like, why are you doing it? Who will it impact, and how will it impact them?
Okay, so we need to maybe put that in the PPI process then, like get people to, like, as they start to engage, go, I definitely want this for you. I definitely, why do I want this? Because I think it's going to make you better in some way. And maybe asking them to forecast a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. And I think and it doesn't even have to finish with the end of their result, like the end of their project. It could be that their project then has an impact on another researcher who is doing something else. You know, it's just this continual line because we are all connected. But definitely, I think we really need to think about why are we doing and who does it impact and how is it going to impact them? Is it going to help them? Then let's do it and let's do it together. Is it actually going to cause anyone harm? Then don't do it. Stop. Don't harm people. Let's just do everything to help people.
Okay, that's fantastic. So, takeaway, don't hurt people. Brilliant.
Yeah, that's it. If that's the only thing that people take away from this is don't harm other people, I think that's a very positive message.
Winner. That's brilliant. All right, Tracy, thanks ever so much. And yeah, looking forward to speaking to you again soon.
Thanks, Laura.
Thanks for listening to the Impact Interviews. If you enjoyed this episode, then please check out our back catalogue. And if you've any questions for either us or our guests, then please be sure to get in touch. We'll be back next week with something new. So see you soon.